and not quite as big a crowd as last week, but still nice to see a lot of faces visiting with us that I haven't met yet. It's always nice to meet other followers and believers in God. But we want to talk today about hope. I will be coming back to the covenants. I just wasn't feeling great about the lesson I had planned for today. Wasn't quite ready as of yesterday, so I want to come back to something I had been thinking about for a while, and that is hope. And Romans 15:13 says, "May the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace in believing, so that by the power of the Holy Spirit you may abound in hope." Hope is an interesting thing. I think pretty much all kids have hope. They grow up hoping to, you know, they can get to do the stuff that older kids are doing, or they're hoping that they can, you know, become a teenager, and they're looking forward to when they can drive and when they can get a job and when they can move out of their parents' house and not be told what to do. They have all these things when you're a child that you're looking forward to, that you can't wait to get there. And so you're always, as a child, looking forward to that day when this new thing you'll be able to do. Because you grow up and there's all this stuff you can't do. You know, you can't do that. No, you can't do that. That's what you hear when you're little. But as we get older, as my wife and I would say with some of our family members, as they've gotten older, that curmudgeonliness sets in without hope. And that people without hope begin to lose the joy of life, begin to lose even a desire for doing and continuing to move on, and kind of begin to get stuck. And in fact, Ecclesiastes, I don't have it up on the board, but Ecclesiastes 12 talks about remembering your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near, which you will say, "I have no pleasure in them." Before the sun and the light and the moon, the stars are darkened. And it goes on to kind of describe the physical decay that happens as we get older. The days of your youth, in terms of the Bible, typically goes up to about 40. And that 40 plus is kind of about when the days of your youth are beginning to be in the past. And he's saying you need to remember them. You need to remember God early, because if you don't remember God early and those difficult days come and you wake up every day and you don't have pleasure in them, there's a lot of pain, there's a lot of trials, and there's a lot of difficulty. And if you haven't already remembered your Creator, and if you haven't already been filled with joy and peace and hope, you generally don't acquire it then, because life is tough. Life is physically hard. And that's a difficult time. It's not impossible. I've seen it happen, but it's rare. For an older person who never had hope and didn't have hope in something that was still lying out there, that they get stuck. And they feel like there's nothing left. But the truth is, as we sing songs about it, we have no less days of our life than what we had decades ago. Because eternity has no end of days. We have everything to look forward to, because no matter what we have experienced in life, nothing we have ever experienced, nothing we have ever wanted, will ever be as great and as glorious and as grand as what God is promising us in eternity. And so there is nothing that we cannot continue to hope in, regardless of difficult days. And I've been told recently, a number of people have talked with me, a lot of family members and different things have been talking with me about, you know, my wife's situation. We've struggled with her cancer for the last few years, and she's kind of near the end of that road now. and have wondered why some people call it just mentally strong. I don't think I'm mentally strong. I have been bowed weak, but I have hope. In fact, I look forward for her to the glory she will attain in the near future. Because it's not been pleasant. Been difficult days, lots of difficult days over the last few years. But she's got a glory coming sooner than I will get. I'll get to keep struggling through. But she's got glory coming, and I look forward for her to that. And I'm happy for her for that. Because I know about that. And it is this hope, and it is this joy that allows us to press on through tough times and through trials and through difficulties, because we know what's coming will always be greater. You know, I've thought a lot about now living almost 60 years in this world and obviously in America. And for a lot of younger people, a lot of present times seem really bad. But in a lot of ways, life in America is a lot better now than it was 50, 60 years ago. But what I do think is missing, and this is what I think hope as a culture is very much been brought low. I don't think we see ourselves as being better in the future. All we do is see ourselves as being horrible. And I'm going to talk about necessarily you and I, but our culture. We're living in a culture that ceases to have hope for a better future. And I think the negative feelings that pervade our country are more to do with the lack of hope and the lack of growing than it is in actual improvements that have happened. And for those of us who have been around since the 60s and seen all of that, the 60s and 70s were not great decades. And some of these last decades has reminded me of some of the times in the 60s and 70s. And so, to me, it's kind of come back again. But back then, there was still a feeling amongst much of the population that we would get better, that we would improve it. And I'm not sure that exists in great abundance anymore in our country. And so we have to, I say all of that because I think we have to be careful to not get sucked down by that lack of hope in our country, and that we need to have hope. We need to be, as talks about here, we need to abound in it. And I've talked about this in other passages. You know what the word abound means? And my description for the word abound in the New Testament is when I first learned how to properly make a snowman. So I didn't grow up in the snow. Occasionally, I went skiing. But I didn't make snowmen when I went skiing. So I didn't grow up with any snow around me. And then we were someplace and with family, and we were trying to build a snowman, and he's like, "No, you don't do it that way." I'm like, "Yeah, okay, mine's not working very well. I don't know how you get these nice round balls of snow and put on each other." And he's like, he took a little piece of snow in his hand, and he's like, set it down in all this, you know, nice blanket of snow, and he began to roll it. He rolled it all over till it grew bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And then he's like, "Okay, that's big enough for the first one." And then he got another little piece and he put it in the snow and he rolled it up again until it got to the middle size. Did it for the head. And like, because in scripture, that thing of taking something like the size of your fist, put it in the snow and start to roll it and just have it gradually get bigger and bigger and bigger as you roll it around, that's exactly what abounding is. Is that it just keeps getting a little bit bigger. It just keeps growing a little bit more. But the problem is, it also means it's not getting less and it's not growing. We need it to abound. We need it to grow. Regardless of life, regardless of the trials, regardless of the difficulties, our hope needs to keep abounding in God. And so we need to be filled with hope. And so there is an eager expectation in hope. In Romans 8, verses 18 through 25, and I'll come to my image there in a minute. You think that that child is eagerly expecting to eat some candy? Now, I no longer eat candy, but I can remember, you know, going and seize candy, you know, choosing out the ones I wanted, and when and my mouth was already kind of salivating for eating that seized candy once, you know. In fact, I ate them just outside the front door. That's when I ate the first piece. You know, like the door to this store is kind of like, okay, oh, time to open up the first one. I didn't wait till I got home. My expectation was so strong that I was like, oh, I'm eating it right when I get out of here. And then I'm going to eat them, you know, regularly for the next, you know, 2-3 hours. But there is an eagerness when we're looking forward to things. And I sometimes wonder if we have that eagerness. Are we looking forward to it with an anticipation and an eagerness that we can't wait for that? And so in Romans 8, in this whole passage, in this chapter, Paul had been writing to them, and in this particular part, he's talking about living in the Spirit. And that living in the Spirit doesn't mean we don't have issues. It doesn't mean we don't have difficulties. But it means that we know that we are heirs with Christ. That what Christ did in living and dying and in that Lord's Supper, as we think about his body and blood, and as he died for us, that we can live with him. And so we know that. When we're living in the Spirit of God, we know we live with him. And so he tells us then in verse 18, he kind of goes, and then he starts talking about the suffering that we go through. And he's, because he says, for this, I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory that is revealed to us. Now, when I personalize that, none of the things that my wife or I have endured the last few years in dealing with cancer, her cancer, you can't even begin to compare that struggle with the glory. They're not equal. They're not even close. And even the difficulty that, you know, her cancer treatments have done to her body. I mean, it's weakened her in the flesh. It's weakened her mind. And it's created all these difficulties. But you still can't compare it to what God is giving us and what God has provided for us and what God has built for us. And that's what he's trying to get us to see. And for all of us to look at that and say, you know, and a lot of us can suffer a lot. I mean, I'm well aware. I've seen a lot of it for a lot of my life. My childhood was very difficult. And, you know, I've had a really wonderful time for the last 30 years with my wife. But it doesn't mean it didn't have its trials. It may have its difficulties. We've had those too. But we have a hope that exceeds all of the challenges, all of the trials. And he says, for the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it in hope. In hope that the creation itself will be set free from its bondage to corruption and obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. He's like, even all of the creation is looking forward to this freedom of being set free from the bonds of this flesh. He says, for we know that the whole creation has been groaning together in the pains of childbirth until now. And not only the creation, but we ourselves who have the first fruits of the Spirit groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for adoption as sons, the redemption of our bodies. For in this hope we were saved. This is why we were saved, because we're looking forward to putting off this body. And I know when we're young, there's often so many things we want to do in the world that it's hard to look past this world and this flesh and, you know, getting married and having kids or all the different kind of milestones of life, it's hard to look past that because we're always looking forward to adding those things to our life. But the reality is we are, even as young adults, we should be looking beyond just this momentary stuff to a much greater and brighter future. And he says, now hope that is seen is not hope. For who hopes for what he sees? But if we hope for what we do not see, we wait for it with patience. Likewise, the Spirit helps us in our weaknesses. And he said, for we do not know what to pray for as we ought, but the Spirit himself intercedes for us with groanings too deep for words. And he who searches hearts knows what is the mind of the Spirit, because the Spirit intercedes for the saints according to the will of God. And we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good. For those who are called according to his purpose, for those whom he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his Son, in order that he might be the firstborn among many brothers. And those whom he predestined, he also called, and those whom he called, he also justified. And those whom he justified, he also glorified. I meant to put verse 30 in that passage up there. And so, this idea that we struggle in this world, but God is there to help us. And not just to help us learn to do better, but also just to take care of us in our weaknesses. Help us through the difficulties until we can see him. And we can and see and experience that glory and that adoption and that freedom of the bondage of the flesh. And so all of these things we need to do with an eager expectation. But I often wonder, and so some examples, and when you plant vegetables, since I know a number of you like to like plant gardens, when you plant them, do you expect to eat them? And do you expect to enjoy them?
No.
Really? I'm guessing you don't plant them very much.
Them.
I'm going to guess that if you're... Anybody who doesn't expect that would stop doing it, right?
No.
Because once you start killing them, once you start doing those things, you're like, what's the point? It's kind of what my family does, too. Like, you know, my daughter recently told me, I'm the only one of our family who's ever kept a plant alive for a while. Don't have green thumbs, and I don't even try to plant those things. Not that I wouldn't enjoy them if I did, but I don't want to do the work. But there's an expectation in them. And they get this child who is looking at all that candy. There's an expectation there. You're looking forward to it. We need to have that hope. We have nothing less to look forward to regardless of our circumstances in life. No matter what situation you're in, you have nothing less to look forward to than has ever existed. And so, think about even when you work. You don't really like working, right? You don't necessarily like your jobs all this time. But do you expect your paycheck?
Yeah.
When do you expect paycheck?
On time.
On time. But it doesn't happen every day, right? We don't live in a time where we get paid every day. In the ancient world, they did. We don't. We get paid maybe every week or every couple weeks or once a month, kind of different ways. But we expect to get that. We then expect to use it for all things. But the idea is when. Sometimes we have to wait. You know. So if you had, unlike me, who you know didn't have a lot of self-control walking out of See's Candy, if you had like your parents there, and like you know, when I was a kid, I couldn't do it because my mom wouldn't let me. So as I became older, I'm like, I'm just going to do it. I don't want to be told to wait. But she'd make me wait. I'd have to get home. And I'd have to open it up at home. There's an expectation God has planted in us. And he's trying to help us understand how great what he's built is. So his descriptions of it, the handful of places in Scripture where he describes for us a living situation of being with God, he describes it in ways that he uses the idea of things like gold I mean, you got gold streets. The idea of a gold street, right? Well, that seems kind of, that'd be really wasteful of gold, wouldn't it? But could you imagine having such a abundance of precious, you know, gold and jewels that you would just take gold and line your street with it as opposed to dirt or asphalt? Or make your doors, it's like, instead of wood, let's make the doors out of, you know, diamonds. You know, like, that imagery is, I don't think it's literal, but I think it's there to help us understand that everything we've experienced is a small, a lower level of joy and love and all the fruit of the Spirit than what God has provided and made for us. Everything that God is making for us is better than what we've experienced here. And so we think about it that way. I think it's important for us to try and remind ourselves to do this, to look forward to that. So regardless of our weakness, God has created our destiny to be like Jesus, to be raised in his glory, to become just like he is. 1 John chapter 2 talks about that. We don't yet know what he's like, but when we see him, we will be like him, it tells us. Foresee yourself with God. There's actually a passage here in Acts 2 when they were preaching the gospel on that day of Pentecost, short time after Jesus had been resurrected and ascended into heaven, when the apostles were preaching to many gathered in Jerusalem, and they were talking about it, when he begins to describe the purpose of Jesus in verse 22. And he comes down and talks about something that David had written, a vision that David had seen. And it's actually from Psalm 16, but David says concerning him, talking about, this is prophetic about Jesus. I saw the Lord always before me, for he is at my right hand that I may not be shaken. Therefore my heart was glad and my tongue rejoiced. My flesh also will dwell in hope. For you will not abandon my soul to Hades or let your Holy One see corruption. You have made known to me the paths of life, and you will make me full of gladness with your presence. And so this Psalm of David, obviously when David wrote it, it would read more like, this is David, right? He's talking about the hope he has in the flesh because of God being with him all the time. And we're told that this is prophetic about Jesus and that why Jesus would, his flesh would not be corrupted, that his flesh would be resurrected. And that's the kind of the point they're making from it. But we think about that. Do you think David foresaw himself with God? Do you think he imagined that? Do you think he thought about that? Sure. Do you think Jesus did when he was walking in the flesh? He talks about it at the end when he's, you know, praying about, Lord, please, you know, receive me back that I might have the glory with you again that I had before. That imagery and that idea of us being with God, that God might take our hands, that he might wipe away all our tears. Those are important things to be thinking about so that we raise our mind above the world and the stuff we go through to a much greater opportunity that comes to be cared for. Now, I don't know if all of you might not all have great memories of your childhood. You might not have had parents who kind of loved you and took care of you and wiped away. But even sometimes those who didn't have the greatest of parents, you still might remember a moment when you were little, when you know you were hurting or you were you scraped up a knee or something, and you kind of ran to your parents and they kind of picked you up and helped you and kind of cleaned it up and made everything okay, right? That imagery, that's given to us to help us understand God. In fact, marriage has been given to us to help us understand also our relationship with God. That's actually one of its greatest purposes, and how God sees us as part of it, an extension of himself. We are part of him. We are made like him. And so the vision that David had in the presence of God, really three things he talks about. His heart was filled with joy. His tongue rejoiced. He spoke about the joy. And I think we would do well not only to think about it in our minds, our hearts, and just kind of imagine it privately, but you know, when we think about things and then we speak them, we actually, we solidify them. By talking about the things we think about, we make them more concrete. And so, all of us need to rejoice with our tongue. Talk about our hope. Talk about the goodness, not only that God has brought us, but that we still expect to receive from God. And we have to live in hope. We should be living as people, regardless of the circumstances of our life, regardless of a pandemic or a shutdown or whatever, that we live knowing that my future is bright and glorious, and that we always have that hope in us, no matter come what may. And in many ways, having gone through difficulties recently, it makes my words a little bit more impactful to people. I've probably said similar things in the past. I've talked about some of these points in the past. But now, having gone through them, some of you probably look at it and go, he's still talking about it while his wife sits at home in hospice, because it's still true. And so do we see ourselves with God? Do you imagine that? Do you picture it? Do you think about it? You should. You need to. It's helpful. And you need to imagine God as he describes accepting us into his home that he's built for us to dwell in too, that he will bring us there. He says, do we want to be there? Seems like a really weird question, right? But sometimes we're told we should like something, but we don't always want it. And I think it's a challenge. If we don't want it, do we want that? Do we want to be with God? A lot of imagery, a lot of things we've heard and taught and things we understand about God, sometimes people don't have a desire to be with God. They don't think it will be glorious or wonderful or good. And so they don't desire what God is providing. You have to think about, do I really want it? Or do I really want to be in the flesh? Do I really want to have all these pleasurable days? The problem is, those are only going to be for a short time. They're going to go away at some point for all of us. Does it cause joy for you regardless of your circumstances? Can you? I was challenged a while back. In fact, in 2 Corinthians, talks about it. That regardless of circumstances, that we can be renewed every day, and that we can have joy with God. Like, wow. Sometimes circumstances can get really hard, and you go, can I still do that? In fact, not can I still do that, but that's what he's calling me to. To have that and experience it and live it. Because that, as some of my family members have told me, some of what I've done apparently in the last year might be more impactful, especially for my family, than stuff I've preached for the last 30 years. And so for all of us, some of the greatest lessons and the greatest things you will ever show to other people is the things you've done when life is hard. The faithfulness, the joy, all of those things that you maintain hope, a hopeful attitude in spite of the difficulty. It's a challenge, no question, but it's one we need to remind ourselves to come back to be filled with hope. That's why he gave us the Holy Spirit, to be filled with hope and to abound with him, and so that we always have God at our right hand. We'll go ahead and end it there. I appreciate your time here today, and I hope this is a good reminder for you to find the hope of God. Don't let go of it. Don't forget it. In spite of circumstances, the better days lie ahead. We're going to go ahead and sing a song to kind of close out Above the Bright Blue. And please, if you have any needs whatsoever, please reach out to us. Anybody here in our congregation, we'll help you out in any way we can and if we are able. So please, let's go ahead and stand and sing.